We are now going to switch gears and talk about another federal issue, one that has grabbed the attention of many, many people, but actually not enough given what happened in terms of the terror attacks in Boston have let some of these news items kind of fade away or get lost in the shuffle. So we're going to raise it now, which is this immigration bill by the alleged Gang of Eight, the bipartisan Gang of Eight, as it's being called. We are joined here by Charles Lawler, who's chair of New Day Maryland, and Ann Bogado, who is a community journalism coordinator as well as a writer for The Nation magazine, for Color Lines, as well as a writer for The Nation magazine. Ann, welcome. Good to have you with us.
And, hi, Mark. It's
Aura. Aura. Did I say Anna meant Aura? I apologize. And Charles. So, Aura, let me begin with you. I've been reading a lot about this piece, and some are arguing this is a great compromise that allows all positions to be heard, but others, especially around certain pieces around path to citizenship, have a lot of critique of it. What is your take?
Well, you know, let's call this what it is. It's really a border security bill, right? The entire legislation hinges on expanding security at the southern border through the increased use of surveillance technologies and especially drones. So we're talking about dumping billions of dollars into border security at a time when net migration at the southern border is at zero. We need to remember that. So as it stands now, we won't even see any applications through what the immigration bill outlines. We won't see them being so much as even processed until these new measures are instituted at the southern border. And what I also find troubling is the fact that the Senate, in the Senate alone, there was a hearing last week. There was an all-day sort of marathon hearing yesterday. There was another hearing on the topic with Janet Napolitano today. Both Senators Rubio and Schumer have made perfectly clear that there's plenty of more hearings to come. There'll be committees, there'll be more debates, and that the bill will be amended. And with this Congress, that essentially means that it will be conservatively amended, right? And in the meantime, some 1,100 people will be deported each day until any potential legislation is put into place and until this trigger goes into place, the southern border trigger. So this is somehow the fix, fly more drones at the border. It seems like the absolutely wrong focus to me.
And Charles Lawler, welcome. Your take before we ask some real specific questions.
Hey, Mark, thank you so much, man, for having me on the program as well. And, you know, in some respects, I agree with the earlier comments of the caller, but case in point, we need to fix this immigration problem. It's almost soaked up way too much time in everyday conversation, not just on the Hill in D.C., but also in states like mine here in Maryland. The immigration issue, specifically the illegal immigration issue, the system has to be fixed, and the wrong people are being blamed. It's the same talking points that I'm hearing on both sides, whether Democrat or Republican. Yes, we need border security, but we've known that for a long time, and yes, we need to get the system fixed. I applaud the efforts and the bipartisan efforts going forward, but anything that provides wide sweeping amnesty across the board without making sure everyone has their fair turn, their fair share, and a system that, in my opinion, is much more efficient than what we have now, is not going to be good enough. I think that's where you're getting a lot of opposition to this bill, is it almost provides amnesty across the board without making sure that those who have waited in line for years and done the things the right way that they should be the first ones at the table, provide the opportunity, and then it should open itself up from that point on for each and every immigrant going forward. Shame on us for having an antiquated system that's not fixed, but at least we're going down a road of having bipartisan conversation of fixing this system.
So, Aura, let's talk about this for a moment. I mean, my reading of the bill, I don't know if it's amnesty, but it's 13 years or more before anybody who they deem as undocumented can even think about becoming a citizen. Is that right?
Right. It's a 13-year process. It's also a $2,000 process. It also includes paying back taxes. Now, a lot of the 11 million people that are, you know, being addressed in the bill will be able to afford it, but a lot of them won't. I've been spending time off and on this year, sort of developing a story on a local women's day labor corner here in Brooklyn, New York. And, you know, women who work there, they, you know, sort of get there early in the morning, hope to be picked up to do backbreaking work, you know, literally on their hands and knees, scrubbing floors and cleaning houses. And, you know, they're lucky if they make $50 for 8 hours of work. Those are on the days that they can even find work. So for those kinds of people that are in sort of very precarious labor positions, it's going to be extremely difficult to not only pay, you know, figure out how to pay the back taxes, but also pay the fines. And also, frankly, learn English. I mean, for anyone who's learned a second or third language, we know that, you know, especially as you get older, it's a lot more difficult to sort of be able to do that. So there are a lot of sort of parts to this bill that I think will inevitably leave people out. There's a big concern as to, well, what about the future flow? People are going to, you know, keep coming after we legalize 11 million people. But I wouldn't be surprised if all 11 million people aren't able to sort of make it under this bill due to, as you mentioned, not only the extremely long process, but also the fines and also this English part of, learn English part of the bill as well.
Well, let me take out that before we go to the phones here. 410-319-8888, Tahim, you're our first caller. We're going to come to you in just a minute, literally in a couple of minutes. But the question of English, before we get into some of the other issues in this bill, and I say this really sort of tongue-in-cheek, but not really, that the only time that immigrants in this country were required to speak English were not really immigrants. They were the slaves who were brought here in chains. And they couldn't speak their language. They weren't allowed. But every other group that came to this country, and then they tried to force Native Americans not to speak their languages by putting them in schools to brainwash it out of them. So, I mean, if we had followed that rule over the last 200 years, Charles, 300 years, 200 years, I should say, then there'd be no German Americans, there would be no Jewish Americans, there'd be no Greek Americans, there'd be no Italian Americans, because most of the first generation of those immigrants never spoke English. My grandparents on my father's side, I had to speak a foreign language to talk to them. They never spoke English. So what does that mean?
Well, Mark, that's a difficult question to ask.
Why?
I'm gonna simplify it this way. The United States of America has always been, the strength has always been in our unity, always, first and foremost. I want to be careful how I state this, Mark, but I feel very strongly about this. If we don't all speak the same common language, how in the world are we going to continue to create upon or build upon and to further develop the greatest nation on God's earth, the United States of America? I don't think it's a problem with people speaking their native tongue in their homes and even in the privacy of their personal lives on an everyday basis. But there has to be a common language that we call English. To try to refer back to slave times when slaves were made to speak English and out of control, whatever the case may be, and then try to wrap that up and somehow equate it to German Americans and other hyphenated Americans. Mark, I believe part of our problem is the fact that we are hyphenated Americans, and we're struggling trying to find out what our American culture is because we're trying to blend it with so many other cultures, which, albeit, are very important in their place and time. But you wouldn't go over to Italy and have somebody call themselves an American Italian or a German Italian. They're Italians or they're French. They have that common culture in mind. Our culture here in this country is one of freedom, constitutional independence. It is what we have built one of the strongest nations in this world on. I honestly believe there has to be common language. That doesn't mean, and never have we precluded anyone from speaking their language in their own personal lives, but there has to be a common thread, a common language, a common goal, a common constitution, Mark.
And I guess what I was talking about was the fact that most people from Ben Franklin used to freak out about Germans speaking German, but they didn't start speaking German until 1918. But anyway, what are your thoughts on this, Aura?
There is no national language, and this is something that's sort of gone back and forth since the formation of what is now, right, the United States. And we, frankly, this idea that, you know, we have to speak a common language or else we're not one nation, I kind of reject that. There really is no same language as it is. I know plenty of Navajos, for example, that only speak Navajo. The only way that I'm able to communicate with them is through an English language interpreter. And so to suggest that, you know, we need to sort of codify this idea that we all have to speak the same language in order to operate as one nation is, I mean, I understand the sentiment, but it's just not true. As it works right now, it's just simply not the case. And to make another part of this bill more difficult for people to acquire any kind of status and eventual citizenship to really hinge that on English is really unnecessary. There's those whatever number of those 11 million people haven't acquired sufficient English language skills, they're still doing a lot of essential work here in the United States. They're helping pick the strawberries that I ate this morning for breakfast. You know, they're cleaning homes in my neighborhood. They're taking care of children. They have limited English language skills, but they have plenty of other skills, and their labor is valued as such that it doesn't really matter how much they're able to, you know, hold an English language conversation with their employer.
So let me go to the phones here, 410-319-8888. Tahim, you're on the air. Tahim, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. How you doing?
Very well. Welcome.
Thank you. excuse me. I'd just like to say that I heard what the last gentleman said about as far as hyphenated citizens. Well, my take on that is, you know, and he's right in a way. We're the only people over here in the Western Hemisphere that go by hyphenated, I guess you could say, nationalities. Everybody else, everywhere else, they're just one nationality. Okay? I could be from the Aborigines, but I'm not going to say I'm Aborigine American or something like that. But what I wanted to say as far as the immigration issue goes is that this country has had plenty enough time to correct the issue. They've been allotted enough money to at least to relieve the issue. And now they have people over here in this country that's been over here for God knows how long illegally, but they're only here for one purpose. They're here to do the jobs that the Americans don't want to do for the wages that they're being paid to do it. And it's kind, to me, it's kind of a similarity, whereas later down the line, they're going to come up with some legislation after these immigrants, wherever they may be from, has done their bidding, and then they'll come up with some legislation, whereas they're going to get rid of them, not on the arena of genocide, but just sending them back to wherever they came from. And I'm not talking about...
Okay, time. It's an interesting time. Let me let our guest kind of respond to what you were saying. And,
okay.
And Aura, do you want to start first, and we'll go to Charles?
Sure. I mean, I think he brings up a really good point in terms of we've been waiting a really long time. And it's interesting that we started with Boston. You mentioned Boston at the top during the introduction. On 9/11, there was supposed to actually be a hearing in Congress about this very topic. 9/11 came and went. We've been through, two wars and a lot since then, and we're still on the same topic, right? There has been a lot of money, thought, and a lot of time being poured into this. And in the meantime, what's also happened is there have been a record number of deportations. Under the Obama administration, a lot of Democrats will be surprised to learn that he's deported a record number of people, more than any other president in the history of the United States. If we keep deportations at the rate that they're going right now, the Obama administration will be responsible for as many deportations as have happened since the beginning of deportations through 2007. And so, you know, listeners may want to think about, do we want this to really trigger on the border, which is already secure, or do we want to, you know, begin a system in which those deportations are halted? And, you know, that sort of puts a good down payment on, moving forward. Perhaps stopping those deportations will allow an atmosphere in which lawmakers really craft something that is workable.
Your thoughts, Charles? Then we'll go back to the phones real fast.
Yeah, Mark, real quick, you can blame a lot of the problem on politicians. That's really easy. I think we have too many full-time politicians. I think that a lot of times they get caught up in receptions and looking nice and that the world-class speeches they want to give to ensure their reelection bids are in order. They're not doing their job. It's probably one of the most inefficient systems in this country, and I'm talking about the political one. And a lot of that goes back to us, Mark, folks on this phone call, our callers, that we don't hold our elected officials accountable, that we're not enforcing what I call quick-turn elections instead of these long-term elections where people stay elected 30, 35, 40 years. They say the problems continue on, but yet we don't change out our same congressmen the way we absolutely ought to. So I think the big problem, one big part of our problem is the political system that we've created and that these politicians that we've allowed them to get away with.
Let's go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. Maureen, you're on the air. Maureen, you're on the air. Maureen, you there?
Yes.
You're on the air.
Thank you. Hi. Well, I think it's somewhat of a straw man argument to say that it, to call it an amnesty, to say that there's no that it's a, just a free ride, because the bills, all the bills that are being discussed, are considering payment of fees, a long waiting period, and very stringent requirements that have to be fulfilled by the people who are waiting in line. And there is consideration of those people who are already, I believe it is 4 million people who are waiting for their paperwork to be processed and decisions to be made. And then on the question of fluency in English, it is... This is always a, such an emotional point, but it's really not of concern. People who come here at a young age, when it's easy to learn a language, become fluent. If they're born here, they're, or they're young children of immigrants, they become fluent quickly.
All right.
People who are, once you're into your 20s or something, it's harder to learn a second language or a third language or whatever, and they'll never be that fluent. This has been true with all immigrant populations in our last great waves of immigrants also. Those people who are elderly, they will rely on the younger generation to translate for them. This is the way things work.
Maureen, thank you. I appreciate
that. They don't comprehend English, but they're not.
Maureen, I'm sorry. We're almost out of time, but I do appreciate your call. And what you said was very important, I think. But I want to get our guests to kind of very quickly, Bogado, to kind of wrap up with what do you think will happen if this bill passes, and do you think it's going to pass?
That's a very good question. I have a lot of sort of doubts with the House, unfortunately. I think they've been able to move, you know, really well on some bills and surprise me definitely with VAWA, for example. I was pleasantly surprised that they could move forward on that. I don't know what the final bill will look like. I think that, like I mentioned, I think it's going to turn out to be a lot more conservative than what we see here. There seems to be, you know, some type of consensus over a path to citizenship. We'll see if that path to citizenship is turns out to be a lot longer than 13 years, or if some type of sort of permanent second-class non-citizen status might be created as a result.
And Charles, where do you think this is going to take us?
Brother, I honestly think that this bill will not pass as written. There's going to be some amendments attached to this thing before it's said and done. So to that extent, I do agree. But one of the big elephants in the room that we're not talking about, Mark, is the cost. The cost of illegal immigration on this country. It's not the sole reason why we're $16.2 trillion in debt. Of course not. Of course not. But it is a big part of why we continue to struggle from fiscal relevance and making sure we balance our bills. For example, here in Maryland is a good example. By allowing the illegal immigrants to have access to in-state tuition, when we're already running up an education deficit of almost $1 billion, we simply...
That's simply, Charles, you say that all the time, that's simply not true. That's simply not fiscally true. That's not the case. The number gets thrown around, whether you agree or disagree with the act. It's just it's been proven to be a number that's way out of line with the reality. It's not $1 billion.
Which number is out of reality?
The $1 billion number you keep quoting.
The $1 billion, no, sir, it's not. In fact, education, Mark, and I'm sure you know this, is the largest spending item in our $36 billion deficit.
Okay, we can't get into all that today. But I hear you.
Okay.
But I think that I do want to thank both of you for being with us. This is and Aura, I'm sorry I announced you as still working for Color Lines. You're no longer there, but you did great work while you were there, and you're a writer for Nation Magazine and more. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Mark, and thank you, Charles.
And Charles, always good to talk to you. He's chair of the New Day, Maryland. Good to have you with us as well.
Thank you, brother. You too, and thank you so much, Aura.
And we're going to take a brief break. And as we go out to this break, before we hit our next segment, we're going to bring a little bit more Richie Havens, Here Comes the Sun. Passed away at 72, one of our great spirits of the land.
Here comes the sun, nice day. It's all right. Yeah, 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 yeah. See that the smiles are returning to the faces. Little darling, it's been so many years since they've been there. Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say, it's all right. Yeah, 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 yeah.